Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, January 21st, 2022, Section A. Midland's Home Inventory on the Decline, by Stuart Doreen. An uptick in the Midland economy is beginning to eat into the increased housing supply that happened during the COVID pandemic. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center reported December 2021 was notable because the months of housing inventory dropped to its lowest point since the beginning of the pandemic. The 2.6 months of inventory is the lowest since February 2020. The number of homes available is the second lowest of the pandemic, trailing only the 639 available at the end of May. The number of homes is down by 101 from the end of October, when there were 750. Declines in inventory month over month happened in both Midland County and Ector County, according to the A&M Center. The 479 homes available and 3.2 months of inventory are the lowest marks in more than a year. Both Midland and Ector counties reported typical increases in home sales in December. In Midland, there were 229 homes sold. It was the eighth time since 2012 that a month-over-month increase was reported in December. There were 163 homes sold in Ector County in December. The Real Estate Center also reported it was the 40th straight month for the average price of a home sold to top $300,000. In December, that average was $351,326, which was less than November, but more than December 2020. The median price in December, $309,900, also was less than the record month of November, but more than December 2020. In Ector County, the median price for a home sold was $235,000. Other median prices include $238,000 in Randall County, Amarillo, and $220,000 in Tom Green County, San Angelo, $225,000 in Lubbock County, and $223,000 in Taylor County, Abilene. Gap grows between local and state averages, by Stuart Doreen. The hike in the price of gasoline in Midland is triple the state average increase this week. AAA Texas reported that the average in Midland rose 12 cents. The average across the state rose 4 cents. With the price of oil jumping into the mid-$80 range, an increase in the price of gasoline was expected, and Midland was one of eight communities where the price increased by 10 cents or more week over week. El Paso had the largest increase. The average there is $3.35, the highest of the 27 larger cities. The average in Odessa also rose 10 cents. Midland and Odessa are numbers 2 and 3 in average price at $3.18 and $3.15, respectively. Abilene is the only other larger area with an average above $3.10. The price there rose to $3.11. AAA Texas is in its weekly report stated the outlook for gasoline demand remains strong and that optimism continues to drive crude oil markets higher. In addition, market analysis are predicted tighter gasoline supplies after a fire on a key oil pipeline from Iraq to Turkey occurred on Tuesday, along with rising geopolitical tensions between Russia and the Ukraine. A AAA Texas spokesperson said the dynamics in the oil and gas market remain complex to start off the new year. The bottom line for the consumer is that market optimism for crude and gasoline demand remains robust, and therefore AAA anticipates climbing gasoline prices in the short term. The average in Midland is up 91 cents year over year, while the state average has increased 84 cents during the same period. PBPA recognizes Top Hand Award winner Autry Stevens. On Thursday evening, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association honored its Top Hand Award winner, Autry Stevens, of Endeavor Energy. Stevens has grown Endeavor into a company that produced over 230,000 barrels of oil equivalent in 2021 and employs over 1,100 people, the largest private employer in Midland County. It's also considered the largest private oil and gas operator in the lower 48 states. Stevens earned a petroleum engineering degree from the University of Texas at Austin. His oil field career began in 1962 when he joined Humble Oil and Refinery, now part of ExxonMobil. After 2 years of service in the Army, Stevens returned to Humble and worked in Pecos, Abilene, and was assigned to Midland twice. During his second assignment in Midland in 1969, he was approached by First National Bank of Midland to do oil and gas property appraisals. His job exposed him to small, independent operators and gave him insight in the future as he formed Endeavor. Stevens purchased land rights on an 80-acre lease near Greenwood and drilled his first well in the Spraberry Trend in 1979. The Top Hand Award is the highest honor distributed by the PBPA each year. This award is given to acknowledge the tremendous contributions individuals have given to the oil and gas industry and the communities of the Permian Basin. Aphasia fundraiser set for in-person return. The Aphasia Center of West Texas is bringing back the Chocolate Decadence fundraiser in person this year. Executive Director Kitty Beineck said after having a virtual fundraiser last year, the Aphasia Center will take precautions during this year's event. Chocolate Decadence is a night of classic decadent desserts, culinary delights, live and silent auctions, and live music. It's set for 6:30 p.m. on January 28th. We did our last live event in February of 2020. It's now been 2 years with a virtual event last year. I think it's hard to host fundraisers right now because we have to make decisions months in advance without knowing what the climate will be like. She added that the center discussed hosting another virtual event or a hybrid event, but decided on an in-person event at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. This will be the first year Chocolate Decadence will be held in Odessa. We serve the entire Permian Basin, and we have some people who we serve from Odessa. We've always wanted to do one of our events in Odessa, but found it difficult to find the right venue. When we saw the Marriott, we knew it would be perfect for her selection. To help with safety concerns due to Omicron, instead of heavy appetizers, the event will have a plated sit-down dinner with desserts available before and after dinner. The event also will feature a solo guitarist, Alberto Madrid, while couples are having dinner. There will also be a silent and live auction. Beineck said Chocolate Decadence has gone through an evolution, especially with themes, but this year the nonprofit is going back to its roots and hosting a more simple and elegant evening. The event also moved from February into January. Desserts will feature 12 different options by Marquette's Cake Studio in Odessa, including white chocolate, chocolate-covered fruit, chocolate mousse, chocolate pecan pies, and more. The fundraiser traditionally raises between 30 to 40% of the nonprofit's annual budget. The nonprofit's mission is to improve the quality of life for individuals and families living with aphasia by overcoming communication barriers at home and in their communities. Aphasia is the loss of the ability to understand or express speech caused by brain damage. Somebody with aphasia, they have a communication problem, Beineck said. Many of them have either lost their ability or had their abilities to speak, read, and write greatly diminished. If someone cannot communicate, it makes it really hard to advocate. I think virtual events are a little bit like that. When we're in person, it's a much better way to communicate our missions and to educate a captive audience that can't always be accomplished virtually. Jan Harbor Rose, 72, of Midland, passed away on January 14th. A private memorial and celebration of life will be held in remembrance of Jan. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Liana Renavetti Ellis passed away on January 18th. A celebration of life will be held at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland on Saturday, January 22nd at noon. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to the local SPCA or to Hospice Midland. Patty George Gandy passed away on January 10th. In keeping with her wishes, cremation services have been chosen. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Pete Henderson passed away on Wednesday, January 19th. The family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday at Nellie Pickham Welsh Funeral Home. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday at Nellie Pickham Welsh Funeral Home.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, January 21st, 2022. Two in race for County Commissioner. Voters in Ector County's Precinct 4 will have two Democratic County Commissioner candidates to choose from in the primary. Armando Rodriguez, who is running for his fifth term, and Savannah Morales, who is seeking her first political office. Another Democratic candidate, Joe DeVia, did not obtain enough signatures to run. The winner of the March election will go up against Billy Hall, who is running unopposed in the Republican primary. Armando Rodriguez. Rodriguez, 61, is a native Odessan who graduated from Ector High School and holds a bachelor's degree in political science from St. Mary's University in San Antonio. Rodriguez said he is proud of the fact he's the sole Democrat and minority commissioner on the court. The former health inspector said he is also the only commissioner who has made the court his full-time job. He has always been committed to making Odessa a better community, Rodriguez said. Quote, being born in Odessa, I'd like to see more opportunities to improve the area. I was born in South Odessa, and going to school in San Antonio, I saw a lot of differences. We were not having the same opportunities as other places were, end quote, Rodriguez said. Asked about his legacy, Rodriguez said he is proud citizens can now vote early at various sites, and they can vote anywhere they like on election day. Quote, before they had to vote at their precinct, and some people might be on the north side and have to go all the way to the south side. Now they can vote anywhere on election day, end quote, Rodriguez said. He takes credit for pushing for new rules regarding new subdivision roads and would like to see additional work done in that regard. Quote, there were a lot of problems. We were accepting a lot of roads that were caliche roads, which was a problem because they're more expensive for us to maintain, end quote, Rodriguez said. Quote, we made rules that if they didn't want to maintain the roads, then they had to make them private. That way, we wouldn't be responsible for it. Of particular concern to him right now is an area near Loop 385, which he described as, quote, a mess, end quote. Quote, I do have a problem on 385, an area that has ETJ, extraterritorial jurisdiction. The city approved it to some extent, and they shouldn't have approved it. But they did, and they do have a road that they have not forced the development to pave that road, end quote, Rodriguez said. Quote, now that we're receiving sales tax for the county, we'd like to fix roads that we accepted as caliche and pave them, end quote, he said. Rodriguez said he is also proud the county will soon have a new juvenile detention center, and if reelected, he hopes to find a solution for the aging courthouse and to encourage more economic development in his precinct. Quote, we do need to do something about the courthouse, end quote, Rodriguez said. Quote, the thing is, I'm afraid something is going to happen. I don't feel very comfortable when I have to go in the elevator. I'm afraid somebody's going to get stuck on the elevator, end quote. He believes rehabbing the current courthouse will be too expensive and said it will be difficult to find space for a new facility downtown. He can see why some are in favor of building a new facility on the south side near the jail. After having served so long on the court, Rodriguez said he is proudest of the fact he's been able to help residents from all over the county, not just Precinct 4. Quote, being bilingual does help a lot. I get calls from all of the other precincts because of the barriers of the language, end quote, Rodriguez said. He fields calls about a lot of different things, from potholes to septic tank issues to procedural matters. Quote, I can work with the health department and other departments to try to solve some of the problems, end quote, Rodriguez said. Quote, we sit down and talk and see if we can come to some sort of agreement that doesn't break the rules and regulations. I do a lot of the translation to see what they want and how they want it. I can also give them directions, telling them it needs to go before the board and how they can do that, end quote. Rodriguez said he stands by the court's recent decision to hire a consultant to help the county discuss how to spend $32 million in American Rescue Plan Act funds. At least one commissioner court candidate said it's the commissioner's job to determine how to spend that money. Quote, it is our job, but we have to go by the rules and regulations. We have an auditor that can help us, but he doesn't feel very comfortable doing it, end quote, Rodriguez said. Quote, there are a lot of rules that we don't exactly know, ways we can use the money and ways we can't. We might use the money on things that don't qualify, and the taxpayers would have to pay back the government. Hiring a consultant that knows more than we do, they can take some of the responsibility, end quote. Personally, Rodriguez said he'd like to see the Aging Health Department building replaced and expand services. He'd also like to provide more assistance to the volunteer fire department as their call volume continues to grow. Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center have asked for additional funding, but Rodriguez said the county needs to know, quote, for a fact, end quote, FEMA will reimburse the hospitals before granting those requests. He'd also like to know exactly what the hospitals would spend the money on. Rodriguez and his wife, Rosa Isela, hope people recognize that he's often the lone vote on many issues and that he's tried to make a difference. Voters also need to know that, quote, people can talk to me. They know where I live at. They know where they can find me. Anytime they call me, I do my best to respond, end quote. Savannah Morales. Savannah Morales, 36, is another Odessa native. The married mother of four children grew up helping her grandparents run Soto & Sons Concrete. The AIM High School graduate also spent 15 years working with her husband Daniel at Melody's Bakery on the South Side, which is owned by her in-laws. She decided to run for office shortly after joining the county's Public Works Department in September. Quote, I was on the phone with citizens and hearing all of their problems. I'm an observer, so sitting back and listening to how they run things, it really frustrated me. Who's here to talk for these people? I just felt like their voices were being ignored. It pushed me and I educated myself on what do they do, how do they run, and I saw how nothing can get done unless it's approved by the court, end quote, Morales said. I feel like some of the leaders have got content in their places and have forgotten why they're in that position, and it's because of us voters who have voted them in. They were supposed to be the voice for us, end quote. Again and again, Morales said she hears complaints about road conditions. Quote, it's frustrating. It's heartbreaking on the phone with these citizens. It's heartbreaking when these citizens come in and these developers are selling land to them and disappearing after telling them Ector County will come in and take care of their roads when they sell 20 to 30% of the block, and that's a lie. We don't, end quote, Morales said. If elected, Morales said she'd do what she could to hold developers accountable for the roads in the neighborhoods they build. Morales said children and seniors are also high on her priority list. She'd like to see a community center built on the South Side so kids could have more positive activities to engage in. She also wants to make sure children have more opportunities once they graduate from high school. Quote, these children are growing up and they're thinking, as soon as I hit 18, I'm leaving Odessa. And that's the mentality we don't want them to have. We want them to be able to stay here and establish, even trades. Not everybody is made for college. They can go off and have an awesome trade and build, end quote, Morales said. Quote, I want the young and the citizens to know we can stay here and have a good city. You don't have to leave and go somewhere else and take your taxpayer dollars of your education there. We can do something here, end quote. She quit her job so she could have more time to get out into the community and hear from her constituents. Quote, I want to advocate for our community. I want to be a change because I think about the future and what it will hold for my children. What are we leaving them? End quote, Morales said. Quote, I want to be able to improve things. As I sit there and talk to the citizens, they feel like they're not being heard. They feel like they're just being shushed out or they don't deserve any of the new improvements or that anyone who comes in is going to speak for them. That's something that frustrated and pushed me, end quote. Morales said she'd also like to make sure there's more of a police presence in the Pleasant Farms area and better funding for the volunteer fire department. Quote, we should be giving them more funds. I know Ector County does give them funds, but it's not sufficient, end quote, she said of the fire department. Morales admitted when she decided to run, she wasn't sure what she needed to do or what party she wanted to run under, so she met with representatives of both parties. Quote, I wanted to meet the parties to see who I really affiliated with. I feel like I'm more purple than red or blue. It's very hard. I'm for the people. I don't know how to explain it. I just want to help the people. I want to be able to be their voices. But in order to do that, you have to pick a party," end quote, Morales said. After friends told her she could be a, quote, conservative Democrat, end quote, she chose to run as a Democrat. Quote, "I have nothing against Republicans. I have Republican friends and family, and I think both parties should be able to work together in order to make change. We can't keep butting heads on things, or we won't do nothing. Things will stay the same," end quote, Morales said. Quote, "My goals are to be able to work as a family and to be able to take care of the families in Odessa," end quote. The last day to register to vote is January 31st. Early voting begins February 14th and ends February 25th. Empty bowls taking on a life of its own. A group of school districts, colleges, and universities is once again collaborating on the West Texas Food Bank fundraiser, Empty Bowls. Plans are to hold it in person from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. March 6th in courtyard of the Mesa Building on the University of Texas Permian Basin campus. The event is usually held in January, with all proceeds going to the food bank. Chris Stanley, Associate Professor of Art, is a founder of Empty Bowls. He said, "Having it back at UTPB means it has come full circle. The last couple of years have been challenging due to COVID." Stanley added that he's, quote, "super excited," end quote, that UTPB is championing the event this year. Quote, "Each college/university is targeting about 300 bowls. So we've got our 300 bowls already made at UTPB. We're in the process of finishing them because we want to be kind of ahead of the game so that we can respond whatever situation there is. So we're hosting some bowl decorating events now because the bowls are already made," end quote, he said. Several organizations have volunteered to help. The women's group from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was expected to help January 19th. Additionally, area schools have come on board, as has Permian High School. Quote, "So it's growing beyond itself, and as kind of the original person who put the seed in the ground here with that core group of students who did it, it's just absolutely amazing to sit back. Now we're getting phone calls from people who want to help us, and so we've built that positive reputation on the project. It's been a joy the last couple of years. It's been so easy just making the bowls because we don't have to worry about also decorating them because we have groups of people who want to come help. To me, it's really what Empty Bowls is about. It's about bringing the community together to work to end hunger, something that we all know is going to be impossible, but at least people are willing to put the sweat equity into make it work," end quote, Stanley said. He has put 22 years of his life into the project. Quote, "In a weird way, it's come to define part of my essence. I don't know what a year would be like if, in a cyclical manner, we weren't glazing bowls and making bowls," end quote, Stanley said. The project has a life of its own now, and many of his former students, their parents, and even grandparents have been part of it. Stanley described it as, quote, "incredibly humbling," end quote. Quote, "That's what you hope for as a teacher, is that the message resonates through generations," end quote, he added. Director of Marketing and Communications Craig Stoker said Empty Bowls is a great outdoor event. Quote, "We talked about a space big enough to have it. We still wanted to do it outdoors. Nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone 2 months from now. But that also gives us some cover in case there's wind. If it's really nice, we could move up onto the deck, but I doubt that we do that," end quote, Stoker said. Quote, "I've been to several things that UTPB does. They've had football pep rallies and things down there. It's a great space. What we decided to do is the event has really outgrown what we can house here at the food bank. So we wanted to find a space that was big enough. Surprisingly, and to my knowledge, the party has never happened on any of the campuses, and they're the ones that make all the bowls," end quote, he added. When Odessa College announced plans for a multi-use area downtown, Stoker said he thought of rotating the event from UTPB to Midland College and then Odessa College, for example. Quote, "It allows the colleges to really highlight their roles and what they've put into this. We're in the 22nd year, and without what they've done, this event doesn't exist," end quote, Stoker said. He added that it would also give middle school students, for example, a chance to see what a college campus is like. Empty Bowls is a partnership of several colleges, universities, districts, and private schools. Quote, "And what they do is they make the bowls, and there are local artists who throw the bowls. The bowls go out to other partners to get glazed. They could go to the Boys and Girls Club or the Ellen Newell Art Museum. So the bowls get glazed in that way, then they go back to UTPB, end quote, Stoker said. He added that UTPB and Midland College have the big kilns where they fry the bowls. The bowls are donated to the food bank, and they throw a party where the bowls are sold for $15 each. Quote, we partner with local restaurants to provide the soup and other food that goes in bowls. And because of a very generous donation from HEB, we are able to have 100% of the event donated, end quote, Stoker said. People get to keep the bowls they have purchased. Quote, you can absolutely buy more than one. There's definitely a following. People wait for empty bowls to make sure that they get them. There are several that have a bowl from every one of the events, end quote, he said. The public can throw the bowls, but there are more opportunities to glaze them. From 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. February 3rd, people can decorate bowls for empty bowls at Crockett Middle School. Crockett is purchasing about 200 pre-made bowls. The hope is to have teams of parents and their children decorating them. Typically, they have a large silent auction featuring pieces by local artists that help with revenue generation because all of those proceeds are donated to the food bank. Since they aren't having a signature event, this is, quote, kind of taking the place of that, end quote. But they also have a golf tournament and clay shoot, which is May 26th, as fundraisers. Stoker said he is expecting between 400 and 600 people at Empty Bowls. Quote, there is no good way to tell. It seems like everything I've gone to has been really well attended. People are just ready to do things in a normal way again. That was also one of the reasons that we wanted to have it in a big place. We're doing it during UTPB spring break, so that we've got the full parking lot and the campus should be fairly empty. But I think if we can get 600 people there, that would be amazing, end quote, Stoker said. There will be the VIP tables for $500 each that will seat 8. With that, you get the pick of the kiln, bowls the artists have chosen. They will have their own food line, so they won't have to wait in the big line. Landgraf endorsed by Texas law enforcement. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, has been endorsed for re-election to the Texas House of Representatives by the Combined Law Enforcement Associations of Texas, CLEAT. Quote, I'm always proud to back the blue, and it's an honor to have them back me as I run for re-election, end quote, Landgraf said. Quote, the Combined Law Enforcement Associations of Texas Political Action Committee has endorsed me as their candidate in this election, end quote. Landgraf was informed of the endorsement in a letter, a portion of which reads, quote, the brave and courageous men and women of Texas law enforcement deserve representation, advocacy, and results they can count on. It is with pride that we endorse your campaign for the state representative of District 81, end quote. Quote, CLEAT is the largest law enforcement organization in Texas, and they fight hard on the side of Texas police officers, sheriff's deputies, state troopers, and other LEOs. End quote, Landgraf stated in a news release. Quote, I'm proud to be right there with them in that fight, end quote. During the 87th Texas legislative session in 2021, Landgraf co-authored House Bill 1900, a bill designed to penalize cities that try to defund their police departments. The bill eventually passed, going into effect on September 1st, 2021. PSP continues vaccine campaign. At the end of February or early March, Permian Strategic Partnership will begin the second phase of its COVID-19 vaccine education campaign. Launched in November 2021, PSP is using digital and social media, TV, video, and print outlets to encourage people to get COVID shots. Tracy Bentley, president and CEO of PSP, said right after Christmas they had billboards go up, and the week before last, its Instagram, Facebook, and some digital media have gone live. PSP is a coalition of 16 leading Permian Basin energy companies who joined together to work in partnership with leaders across the region's communities to address current and future challenges to the responsible development of the oil and natural gas resources of the Permian Basin in the states of New Mexico and Texas, its website said. Quote, next week you'll see our radio and television ads, end quote, Bentley said. She expects to get more feedback once they are up on TV and radio. Bentley added that most of the comments they have received are positive and that people have thanked the organization for taking a leadership role. If they need to adjust along the way, they will, according to the feedback they're getting, she said. The second phase is called Take Back the Basin and will feature a different message of attack the virus, not the vaccinated. quote, "Take Back the Basin is really reminding folks how personal this disease has been for our communities, and that every person who's died as a result of COVID in the Permian has been one of our neighbors, one of our friends, a member of our family, and a member of our workforce and our community," end quote, Bentley said. By putting names to those who have died, they can be remembered and honored. It also is aimed at getting people to understand how personal this is for the community and, quote, that the numbers don't have to be that tragic, end quote. Quote, with the Omicron virus, of course, we know that people who have been vaccinated and boosted can still get the Omicron, but we also know that a vaccination and a boost can certainly prevent it from being a hospital visit and even worse, possibly on a ventilator and possibly even death. So we know that the vaccine can certainly prevent some extremes, end quote, Bentley said. Reading the local newspaper, she said you can tell that the obituary sections are, quote, abnormally large, and they have been since this thing started, end quote, she said. Quote, and I think it's just people read them and they move on, and we forget that those were really important members of our community that probably did not have to die. And so just kind of remembering that and reinstituting in people, it doesn't have to be this way. We need to take care of ourselves and take care of each other, end quote, Bentley added. Asked if the recent COVID surge has slowed the oil business down, Bentley said not that she was aware of, but that could change. Quote, I haven't seen production slow down, end quote, but her office is in downtown Midland and there are lots of closed locations because people are working from home due to the surge, Bentley said. Hospitals also are being slammed with patients not only in Odessa and Midland, but everywhere. PSP is still in the first phase of the campaign. The ads in PSP's campaign give a website where you can look up the nearest testing site. It's at attackcovid.org. There is also a link for people who want to get vaccinated at home, and that is for Texas and New Mexico. Affidavit. Former pastor sexually assaulted teen for years. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed that a 44-year-old pastor sexually assaulted an 18-year-old girl for 2 years on several occasions. Aaron Dwayne Shipman, 44, was charged with sexual assault, family violence, a second-degree felony. The affidavit detailed a victim reported to OPD that she had been sexually assaulted on several occasions by Shipman. The victim stated that she is now 18 years old and that for the past 2 years, Shipman has sexually assaulted her on several occasions. The victim told police that Shipman had engaged in sexual intercourse with her on 3 occasions. The victim also detailed the last incident of sexual assault happened on January 16th. The victim stated that all the abuse was done against her will, the affidavit detailed. A SANE exam was administered, and it showed trauma. Shipman was a former lead pastor at Bible Baptist Church, but after he was arrested and charged with sexual assault, he was fired and banned from the church. Shipman was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Thursday, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $60,000 and was still in custody as of Thursday afternoon. Shipman was the head pastor at Bible Baptist Church. The church released a statement to the Odessa American's media partner, CBS 7. Quote, as a ministry, we are deeply saddened and hurt to hear of the allegations brought against Aaron Shipman. Due to the nature of the allegations, we have terminated the position of Mr. Shipman at Bible Baptist Church effective immediately. He is banned indefinitely from the property and campuses of our church. We are and will continue to be in full cooperation with the authorities and any state officials. We are asking our staff and members not to discuss this matter further while it is pending before the courts. End quote. Morath visits Ross Elementary. Mike Morath, head of the Texas Education Agency, the entity that oversees all schools and districts in the state, went to Ross Elementary School Wednesday to see how opportunity culture was working there. During his media call Wednesday, Murray said Morath's visit was a chance to view opportunity culture, which helps pre-kindergarten through 12th grade districts and schools restructure to extend the reach of excellent teachers, principals, and their teams to more students for more pay within recurring school budgets, the Opportunity Culture website said. Quote, we're seeing pretty significant results in that environment, not only at that elementary school, but about 19 others in the community using that same strategy, end quote, Murray said. Quote, the commissioner was very impressed with what we saw. Very complimentary of our teachers and leaders and what's happening in ECISD, and really commended the progress that he's seen in this district make over the last couple of years. While he hasn't been here on a weekly basis to monitor that progress, TEA, the Texas Education Agency, does monitor all schools and districts at the state level. He's been impressed with the work that's happening, and specifically, he lifted up Ross Elementary today, Wednesday, and the incredible work of the teachers and administrators at that school, end quote, Murray added. While Morath was here, he met with West Texas superintendents at the Region 18 Education Service Center. Quote, there were really two topics. The first was about the state accountability system and the next iteration. As many people may know, the A through F system is by law undergoing some changes, and so he was talking about the new accountability system that will be rolling out in the state of Texas, end quote, Murray said. Quote, the second part of the conversation was about literacy and how we as a state can improve the literacy level among all of our students, pre-K through 12th grade, because Texas continues to lag behind other states in the level of literacy of our students in other states, end quote, he added. On a separate item, trustees at the January 18th board meeting met to deliberate on the proposed bond package. The bond committee presented the recommendations to the board last week. The board indicated that they support all the recommendations of the advisory committee, which are to build a new comprehensive high school to alleviate overcrowding on existing comprehensive campuses, adding a career and technical education facility to support the career and technical needs of students at the high school level, investing in technology, and maintenance and repair, making sure the buildings ECISD has are well maintained, Murray said. The bond committee also recommended that the bond not exceed $400 million and to hold the bond election in May 2022. Quote, they'll continue to deliberate over the next several weeks and hope to call a bond election at some point in the middle of February, end quote, Murray said. An election has to be called by February 18th, he noted. Trustees also decided to appoint someone to fill the vacancy left by Position 7 member Nelson Minyard. Quote, we will talk more specifically about what that appointment process will look like as we meet together during the month of February, end quote, Murray said. During the February board workshop, the board will consider a timeline. Murray said the administration will bring a proposal to them to consider, and it will include a timeline. A similar process was conducted about 2 years ago when Chris Stanley was appointed. He then ran for his spot and won. On the subject of COVID, Murray said there were 351 positive cases Tuesday, which is the highest number since the pandemic began, Murray said. Quote, any students or staff that display symptoms of COVID-19 were able to provide that test to students. So that 351 represents students and staff members that were tested yesterday, January 18th. Additional tests were given yesterday, but they were negative, end quote, Murray said. He added that the district doesn't plan to close. Quote, we do have plans in case we get to that point. Our plan is to stay open. Our parents need us to remain open. Our kids need us to remain open. We've seen the impact of school closure on the academic lives of our students. Then from a health perspective, we also see school as the safest place for our kids. So for multiple reasons, we are going to continue to remain open, end quote, Murray said. He said the only reason to close would be concern that there aren't enough staff members. Quote, we are closely monitoring every school in ECISD to ensure that they have enough staff members to safely operate. But if any school in ECISD is not able to safely operate simply because they do not have enough staff members, at that point we would consider closure. But right now that is not something that we would consider in ECISD, end quote, Murray said. The district has had to consolidate classrooms because it has multiple teacher vacancies. Quote, we have had to pull groups of kids together, so multiple third grade teachers might have to pull their students together in one classroom. At the middle school and high school level, the same thing. Teachers during their planning periods cover other teachers' classes. So it's really not canceling classes. It's really the double and triple coverage of different adults in different schools so that we are able to monitor the progress of our students, end quote, Murray said. The district also strongly recommends mask wearing, has hand sanitizer available, sanitizes classrooms and buses at regular intervals, and has installed air purifiers. Obituary. Winnie, Sarah, Keith, and Tilly. Pflugerville. Winnie, Sarah, Keith, and Tilly, age 91, of Pflugerville, Texas, passed away on January 17, 2022. She was born December 17, 1930, in Abilene, to John Lemuel Keith and Novell Kirkpatrick Keith. She was preceded in death by her grandson, Ryan Keith Antilly, and husband, Bobby Ray Antilly. They were married for 70 years. Survivors include son Keith Antilly and wife Laura of Odessa, daughter Carrie and husband Scott Engelman of Manor, brother Charles Hollis Keith of Littleton, Colorado, and sister Betty Susan Rotten and husband Phil of Abilene. Grandchildren Randall Blake Moeller, wife Heather, and great-granddaughter Whitley Hope of Iola. And granddaughter Kaylee Ray Engelman of Manor. Graveside services will be held on January 22, 2022, 11 o'clock a.m. at St. John Evangelical Lutheran Cemetery, 17701 Cameron Road, Pflugerville, Texas, 78660. Beck Funeral Home, 4765 Priam Lane, Pflugerville, Texas, 78660. Death Notices. Benny Ruth Jackson Sprawls, Odessa. Benny Ruth Jackson Sprawls, 98, of Odessa, died Sunday, January 16, 2022, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. January 25, 2022, at the Abbey Chapel at Rest Haven Funeral Home. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park, Lubbock. Reverend Roy Davis is officiating. Arrangements are by Rest Haven Funeral Home of Lubbock. Juan C. Ramos, Odessa. Juan C. Ramos, 85, died Monday, January 17, 2022, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Virgie Nadine Pierce, Odessa. Virgie Nadine Pierce, 77, of Odessa, died Sunday, January 9, 2022, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, January 21, 2022, at Calvary Baptist Church. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson, Funeral Directors of Odessa. Devin Renteria, Odessa. Devin Renteria, 29, died Wednesday, January 19, 2022, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Donna Lynn Jordan Hodge, Odessa. Donna Lynn Jordan Hodge, 64, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 19, 2022, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 3 p.m. January 22, 2022, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Raul Garcia is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hi, this is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, January 20th, 2022. Obituaries, Patsy Lee Busey, Midland. Life on this earth ended for Patsy Lee Busey during the wee hours of Saturday morning, January 15th. Patsy entered this life on July 7th, 1930 as the only child of Clint Samuel Keith and Bertha Krupp Keith. She was born in Enid, Oklahoma. There will be no service at this time. However, a memorial celebration will take place later. Arrangements are by Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Mary Lou Massengale, Lubbock. Mary Lou Young Massengale passed away peacefully on Saturday, January 15th in Lubbock, Texas, at the age of 72. With her daughter and granddaughter by her side. Mary Lou was born on September 25, 1942, in Lubbock to D.A. Doc Young and Sally Sue Young. Mary Lou is preceded in death by her parents, Mr. and Mrs. D.A. Doc Young, and her husband, Walter Tess Sonny Henderson. She is survived by her granddaughter, Caitlin Janelle Ann Garcia Massengale, her daughter, Catherine Consuelo Massengale Mascarenas Pablo, and her ex-husband, Billy Wayne B.W. Massengale, as well as many more beloved family and friends. A graveside service for Mary will be held Saturday, January 22nd at 10 o'clock a.m. at Ector County Cemetery, 300 South Dixie Boulevard, Odessa. Mary will be laid to rest in Ector County Cemetery, 300 South Dixie Boulevard, Odessa. Virgie Nadine Pierce, Odessa. Virgie Nadine Pierce, 77, went home to be with the Lord on Sunday, January 9th. Nadine was born December 19th, 1944, in McNeil, Arkansas, to Guy and Jewel Plew. She was preceded in death by her husband, Leslie Pierce, and there was certainly a happy reunion in heaven when she arrived. She is survived by her daughters, Belinda Alley, Charlotte Lyons, and Kimberly Pierce of Odessa, and many grandchildren. A memorial service is scheduled for Friday, January 21st at 2 p.m. at Calvary Baptist Church. In lieu of flowers, the family asks donations be made in her memory to Calvary Baptist Church, 8644 Andrews Highway, Odessa, Texas, 79765. Jimmy Lee Hamilton, Midland. Funeral services for Jimmy Lee Hamilton, age 82, of Seagraves, Texas, will be held Friday, January 21st at 10 a.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Seminole, with Dr. Jim Miles officiating. Burial will follow at Gaines County Cemetery in Seagraves, Texas. Family will host a visitation on Thursday, January 20th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Boyer Funeral Home in Seminole. All services are under the direction of Boyer Funeral Home. Coach Hamilton was born December 7th, 1939 in Brownfield, Texas, to Moselle Kennedy and Lee Roy Hamilton. In addition to his parents, Jimmy Hamilton is preceded in death by his wife, Jerry Hamilton, and one son, Doug Hamilton. He is survived by one daughter, Holly Kidd, and husband, Ricky of Andrews, one brother, Dwight Hamilton, and wife, Debbie of Plano, one sister, Diane Middleton, and husband, Dewey of Ulysses, Kansas. He is survived by many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Any donations can be made to Legacy Ranch at 4800 Briarwood Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79707, or First Presbyterian Church in Seminole at P.O. Box 1077, Seminole, Texas, 79360. Betty Ann Kirby, Odessa. Betty Ann Kirby went home to be with her Lord and Savior on December 29th at the age of 74. She was born January 12, 1947, to the late Frank and Mabel Donahue. She is preceded in death by her parents, Frank and Mabel Donahue, a brother, Will Donahue, sister-in-law, Sharon Donahue, and two loving brothers, Carrie and Daniel Searcy. She is survived by her loving husband, Ellis Leon Kirby, daughter and son-in-law, Mark and Tamara Ingram, and stepdaughters, Jenny Criswell and Debbie Melton, a sister and brother-in-law, Mike and Joey Vestel, and brother Morrison Donahue, sister-in-law Alma Donahue, and many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A memorial service to honor Betty will be conducted on January 22nd at Pathway Baptist Church, 1601 West University, Odessa, Texas, at 2 o'clock p.m. Anyone wishing to leave condolences for the family, share memories, or sign the online guestbook may do so at www.acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. Rita Valles Castillo, Odessa. Rita Valles Castillo, 87, died Saturday, January 15th in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Jean Gino Gamble, Odessa. Jean Gino Gamble, 82, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 12th at Focus Care in Midland. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Friday, January 21st at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Darren Willis is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Manuel Gomez Jr., Odessa. Manuel Gomez Jr., 42, of Odessa, died Friday, January 14th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Friday, January 21st at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jennifer Dawn Hestend, Grapevine. Jennifer Dawn Hestend, 44, of Dallas, died Sunday, January 16th in Grapevine. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. January 22nd at Crossroads Fellowship. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Brenda Lee Myers McLean, Belton. Brenda Lee Myers McLean, 75, of Belton, died Monday, January 10th in Belton. No service has been scheduled. Arrangements are by Crotty Funeral Home and Crematory Services of Belton.
January the 17th, 2022. This is Mackie, and I'll be reading from the Odessa American. Pro Parent Tip: Playing Games with Kids by Dr. Lindsay Balderas. Sitting down to a board game may seem like a relic of the past, but there's a substantial amount of research to support bringing this traditional entertainment back into your family's life. Children can learn many important social skills by interacting with adults or older siblings in gameplay, from the basics of communication, turn-taking, and eye contact, to more complicated skills like negotiating conflict and dealing with failure. Playing board and card games with your children creates a perfect opportunity to practice these skills. Children as young as 3 to 5 can begin playing structured games such as those that require basic matching or color recognition. Some favorites for this early age group are Candyland, Chutes and Ladders, Go Fish, and Slapjack. As children get older, more complicated games can be introduced along with more advanced strategizing. When playing games, it is important to model the social behaviors you would like to see in your child. If you notice your child having trouble when they fail or lose, talk through how you react and handle these situations. For example, I notice that you call us cheaters when you don't win, but when I don't win, instead of calling people cheaters, I just think to myself that I need to try again and use a different strategy. It's not fun to play with people who call names. Use language to name the behaviors you do and do not want to see. Example: I like the way you're taking turns. When everyone gets a turn, the game is fair. Example: I don't like when you cry or throw your game piece when you don't win. This is not having good sportsmanship, and people will not want to keep playing with you when you do these things. The most important aspect of gameplay for children is the opportunity to build and strengthen connections and relationships. All children are born seeking connection. Gameplay allows us the chance not only to teach important social skills, but it also gives us time to be close, have conversations, make eye contact, laugh, and enjoy each other's company. Many of the things that have taken a dramatic drop as mobile devices continue to infiltrate our homes and daily routines. So, set the devices to the side and try introducing a game night with your child. Then see what types of important new skills you're able to work on while you strengthen your bond. Dr. Lindsay Balderas has her doctorate in special education from the University of North Texas. She is an assistant professor in the College of Education at UTPB and founding director of the Transformative Leadership Academy in Monahans.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, January 18th, 2022. This is the Nation page. This article is entitled, Fauci: It's Too Soon to Tell If Omicron Is End of Pandemic, by Andy Hoffman and Corinne Gretler, Bloomberg News. Anthony Fauci, the top medical advisor to the U.S. president, said it's too soon to say whether the Omicron variant will herald a shift in the COVID-19 pandemic to endemic. It's an open question as to whether or not Omicron is going to be the live virus vaccination everyone is hoping for, Fauci said Monday at the World Economic Forum's Davos Agenda online conference. Other scientists and government officials have expressed optimism that Omicron's rapid spread and milder outcomes could signal an eventual shift to learning to live with the virus, much like the world does with seasonal flu. Pfizer's chief executive Albert Bourla told French newspaper Le Figaro that life could soon return to normal. Omicron is so contagious that the sheer volume of infections can override its lower severity and strain hospitals, according to Fauci. At the same time, he noted that it's important to focus on fighting the overarching pandemic rather than reacting to every new variant. which is why research efforts should be on vaccines that can give broad protection across mutations. We don't want to get into a whack-a-mole for every variant, where you have to make a booster against a particular variant, said Fauci, who is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. You'll be chasing it forever. That's the reason why what we're all pushing for is finding out what the mechanisms are that induces a response to a commonality among all the real and potential variants we're seeing, and that can occur, he added. Speaking on the same panel, moderated by Bloomberg Television's Francine Lacqua, Moderna Inc. Chief Executive Stéphane Bancel said he hoped to share data soon with regulators on his company's Omicron-specific vaccine. It should be in the clinic in the coming weeks, and we're hoping in the March time frame we should be able to have data to share with regulators to figure out the next step forward, he said. Fauci said resistance to time-tested public health measures has hindered the fight against COVID-19. We have such a degree of pushback against regular, normal, easy-to-understand public health measures, he said. A reluctance to wear masks, to promote vaccination, to the kind of measures we know if we all pulled together as a society, we'd be much, much better off.
Hi. This is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, January 18th, 2022, Education section. Student finds steady path in HVAC career, by Rebecca Bell. After working two jobs in order to make ends meet and then getting laid off from a local oil field service company, Jamie Moran is finally employed at a steady job for one of Midland's most respected HVAC companies. In July 2021, he began working at the Bosworth Company, but he had to overcome several obstacles to get there. Approximately 22 years ago, Moran's mother made her way to California from Mexico when she was pregnant with him. As a single mother with two small children, Moran and his older sister, it was difficult to make ends meet in a new country, so she returned to Culiacan, Sonora, Mexico, and became an English teacher. Jamie and Daisy grew up in Culiacan. Daisy eventually married and moved to Midland with her husband. After graduating from high school and obtaining an electrician certificate, Jamie wanted to study architecture in Mexico. It was very difficult to get accepted into a Mexican university because I was born in the U.S. and had never become a Mexican citizen. Typically, Mexican universities only accept Mexican citizens. So Moran decided to follow his sister to Midland to see if he could get a job and start college in the U.S. First, he had to learn English. Even though my mother taught English in Mexico, we never really spoke it. So I enrolled in ESL courses at the Midland College Cognitive Learning Center. I also discovered that I needed to obtain my GED certificate before I could get into a college in the U.S., and I needed a job. I didn't want to impose on my sister and brother-in-law to support me. So Moran began working the 4 a.m. to 2 p.m. shift at Jumbarito and also worked from 4 to 11 p.m. at Mr. Gaddy's Pizza. Working those hours didn't give me much time for anything else. I also didn't have a car. I would either walk to work or get an Uber. When my manager at Jumbarito found out that I was walking to work in the dark, she was nice enough to drive me to work in the mornings. I also moved out of my sister's house and moved in with a friend, but it was just a one-room apartment, so I slept on an air mattress in the living room. After maintaining this grueling schedule for approximately a year, Moran was hired by a local oil field service company. My goal was to take the GED exam and then start college, but I was working 18 to 24-hour shifts. The pay was good. I rented my own apartment and purchased a car, but I still didn't have time to pursue my dream of furthering my education. In the summer of 2020, during the COVID pandemic and the subsequent downturn in the industry, Moran was laid off. I told myself that it's time to get serious about going to college. So I spent about a week studying for the GED exam and then took the exam and passed. Now I could enroll in classes and work toward a career with steady employment. I did a little research and discovered that Midland College offered HVAC training. Since I already had some electrician training in Mexico, I thought that HVAC would be a good fit for me. Moran enrolled in the Midland College Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Technology Program in the fall of 2020. By July of 2021, he had obtained enough training to get an entry-level technician job at the Bosworth Company. "I love working for Bosworth," he said. "They are a great company and really value their employees. Most days I work normal hours, 8 to 5. Working normal, steady hours is something new for me. It gives me more time to be with my girlfriend, family, and friends." Moran is continuing to take evening classes at Midland College and will receive a certificate in Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Technology this coming July. He said that the Bosworth Company is encouraging him to complete the certificate program. Moran is just one of many MC students pursuing certificates and degrees in applied technology programs. The Midland West Rotary Club is helping students in MC's applied technology programs through scholarship assistance. On March 11th, the club will host its Shoot for the Future clay shoot at Windwalker Farms in Stanton. Proceeds from the fundraiser will benefit scholarships for MC Applied Technology students. The Midland West Rotary Club recognizes that students in the applied technology fields are often overlooked, yet these students are vital to the Permian Basin economy. "It means a lot to me to be able to have a steady job where I can earn a good living. It was a long, hard road to get to this place in my life, but I'm glad I made the decision to return to my birth country and have been given the opportunity to pursue a career that I enjoy." For more information about the Midland West Rotary Club's Shoot for the Future clay fundraiser, visit Midland College website at www.midlandedu.com. Get to know MC's Dean of Fine Arts and Communication. William Feeler has lived in the Midland-Odessa area since birth, 73 years ago, except for his college years from 69 to 78. He's a longtime MC employee, having served the college for 31 years. He holds an Associate of Arts degree from Odessa College, Bachelor of Arts degree in English from the University of North Texas, a Master of Arts in English from the University of Texas in Austin, and a Doctorate in Educational Leadership from the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. Feeler is a published poet and has taught college English for 47 years. He's a longtime coach and softball player and coached basketball for 15 years. In 2001, he underwent a double hip replacement, but it didn't deter him from enjoying sports. He is currently an avid racquetball player. Feeler and his wife, Lori, have been married for 36 years. They have one daughter, who's a head nurse at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa, and two sons. The oldest is a nurse practitioner in Austin, and the younger one followed in his father's footsteps and teaches English at Texas State University and writes fiction. He has two granddaughters, two grandsons, and one of each on the way in April. How did you get involved in education? Well, I always was in love with literature, but prior to my senior year in undergraduate school, I had majors in math, pre-law, political science, and journalism before deciding to teach English during my next to the last semester. What's your favorite thing about Midland College? I enjoy the freedom and the shared passion for community college teaching. I have great colleagues and supervisors.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.